plus 2 is 5. And I'm close.
You'll want to be sure to catch the rest of Pastor Terry's message in just a moment. But first, we want to thank you for tuning in to the Indian Run Christian Church broadcast with pastor and author Terry Bailey. This broadcast is also produced as a free podcast, which you can find on iTunes or become a subscriber through our website. We'll have more information at the end of the broadcast, but for right now, let's join Pastor Terry as he preaches this insightful message.
And again, good morning. How many of you have ever done something, the response to which was, well, that was close. You came close. You were close to right. You were close to successful, which really means you failed. You know, I can say 2 plus 2 is 5, and I'm close. Unless I'm an engineer calculating the load bearing capacity of the steel girders for a bridge, in which case a 20% error is pretty much catastrophic, and nobody's going to care if I was close. It is a failure. I might say, I can leap across this little gorge here, watch, and take a running start and leap, and later you might retrieve one of my fingernails from the rock at the edge of the gorge where I fell to my death and say, see, you came close! It's just like... It made no difference. Several of us made the recent trip to Colombia. We all discovered the communication barriers. I remember years ago when we were traveling to Honduras, one particular difficulty that my mom had is there is a word that means brothers or sisters. It is hermanos or hermanas, depending on whether you're talking about brothers or sisters. There's another word, hormones, which means hormones. And Michael was constantly trying to ask people about their families, like how many symptoms do you have, and always ask them about the level of their hormones. Phonetically close, substantively so far. And yet there are times when it can legitimately be said of a certain endeavor, you are close, and what it means is not that you have failed, but don't quit now. Another step, just one more, you are almost there. Back to the gospel according to Mark. This scribe that Mark openly read to us about gives Jesus kudos for his answers to the questions that we've considered in the two past sermons. First, the Pharisees had asked Jesus whether or not good religious Jewish citizens should pay tax to the occupying Roman authorities, and Jesus gave them an answer that defied their expectations. And the Sadducees took a shot at it, and they didn't believe in the resurrection of the dead. They framed the question in terms of the resurrection of the dead. This woman was married, 7 brothers in turn. Whose wife will she be in your supposed resurrection? And again, Jesus gave an answer that defied their expectations. And this scribe heard both those questions and Jesus' answers, and he concluded that Jesus answered them well, which in the parlance of that day is to say he answered them completely. He answered them definitively. He gave an answer beyond which nothing else could be required, because he totally covered the subject and shut down all possible opposition. He answered them well. And he gives Jesus credit for those answers. So perhaps in a more open spirit, spirit than his predecessors. He tosses out a third question. He wants to know which of all the commandments is the greatest commandment. Now, like the other questions, this has been a thing that has been ongoing, especially among the Pharisees. The Pharisees have had no end of discussions about which of all the commandments is the greatest commandment. And the scribes were largely attached to the Pharisees. You will see that this man has heard all the variations of the answers to this question. And you have to understand, in terms of these answers, that we are most familiar with what we call the Ten Commandments. They counted those as ten of the commandments, but the way the Pharisees figured it, when God handed down the law to Moses on Mount Sinai, he gave them 613 commandments. How would you feel about that one, Joseph? Just 613 simple rules by which to conduct your daily life. Need a handbook. 613 commandments, they said. You'd have to understand that some of those were commandments like, and this was something God said. He said, do not boil the kid as the goat kid, not the person kid. Do not, just clarifying. Do not boil the kid in its mother's milk. It was a thing God said for whatever reasons, and you can debate the understanding of why God passed that one along. It is the reason that many Jewish people adopted the custom of having two completely separate sets of cookware and servingware, because they said, well, you just cannot mix meat and dairy. I will not cook meat in a dish in which I have cooked dairy, and I will not serve dairy on a platter on which I have served meat, because we totally separate meat and dairy, two sets of dishes. It is the reason why still today many Orthodox Jews will not eat a cheeseburger. They are kidding. I'm not. Won't eat a cheeseburger because you can't mix the meat and the dairy. No cheese on the hamburger. Okay, I'm out right now. The bacon was bad enough, but I really like cheeseburgers. No, Judaism for me. But the 613 commandments that the Pharisees recognized included things like this, and they had had no end of conversations trying to decide which of the commandments was the greatest commandment. Now, I put this out in the 8 o'clock service. Mark Orwell, they got it right. If we were playing Family Feud, so the survey says, what among the Pharisees, which is the greatest commandment, what would you predict was the number one answer? Greatest commandment as reckoned by the Pharisees, by anybody who is not present at the 8 o'clock service. Keep the Sabbath. Very good. Mike. Michael gets it right as well. Keep the Sabbath. Somebody tell you where you got this? You just got it. Okay, good. It's not that I don't think you're smart enough to figure that out yourself. It's an awkward way to put things to your wife. Somebody tell you, because obviously, man. Keep the Sabbath. Number one answer among the Pharisees. It wasn't their only answer. Some of the Pharisees and some of the rabbis said that murder was the number one commandment because life is sacred to God. Some of them said, well, the first commandment, thou shalt have no other gods before me, that is obviously the great commandment. It's the one that the Israelites struggled the most with in leaving Egypt. Remember that whole golden calf episode, while the commandments were being handed down, and then the way that they struggled with the problem of worshiping the gods of the Canaanites once they came into the land, and eventually their struggles on that constituted such a failure that they were shipped off to Babylon for some more captivity to beat this problem out of them. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. Obviously, the greatest commandment. And some of the Pharisees and rabbis and scribes stepped outside the big ten and said that the Jubilee cycle was the great commandment. That was the most important one. Every 7 years, and then the big Jubilee every 49 years, canceled the debts, and you set free the bond servants, and you returned the property to the family to whom it originally belonged, and everything kind of resets to zero. And that's the great commandment, and it is true that the amount amount of time that the Israelites spent in the Babylonian captivity related to the number of jubilee cycles they had ignored. So that is true. And the two others were held up as the great commandment. And the scribe would be familiar with all these answers. But what would Jesus say? This man, who had just answered two long-running, thorny theological questions so completely that nothing else needed to be said, what would Jesus say was the greatest commandment to be said? Drawing from Deuteronomy and Exodus, love the Lord your God with all your heart, and all your soul, and all your mind, and all your strength. And then he threw in a freebie because the scribe didn't ask what was the second greatest commandment, but Jesus went above and beyond and said, and the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. Right there is the great commandments. Again, Jesus cuts to the chase. If everyone observed these two positive commandments, we would have no need for any negative commandments. If you love someone, you don't need to be told not to give them a standing report on the basis of knowingly falsified testimony. Nobody has to tell you that. About somebody you love, we were talking about this same subject in 1 John in Sunday school, and I noted that Dorothy Bell had her surprise birthday party yesterday, and I said, she looked surprised to me. I think they pulled this one off on her. They surprised her. And I remember how Ann was keeping it all hushed up and secretly handing out the little flyers. Somebody got one of those little flyers for Dorothy's party. Several of us got the flyers. You notice that there wasn't anything on there that said, and please do not poison Dorothy's cake. Wasn't on the flyer. Does that mean that it was okay to poison the cake? Or does it mean they didn't think they needed to tell us that? You know why they didn't need to tell us that? Because you would poison somebody with love. If you keep these two positive commandments, love God with everything you've got, and love your neighbor as yourself, is no need for negative commandments. And when the scribe in question gave full-throated agreement to Jesus' answer, saying, you have answered well again. This is exactly right. This is more important than all burnt offerings and all sacrifices. And for a Jewish legal scholar of the first century, that was quite something to say. What you have identified here is more important than all those goats and cows and doves and sheaves of wheat and loaves of bread that we have given for centuries and centuries. This tops it all. Now you need to take this in context. In his northern ministry, Jesus had upset the Pharisees terribly because he threatened by his teaching, if it were accepted, to replace their elaborate legalism, which was the basis of their life. Nobody likes to have the basis of their life challenged. This is in the south, in Jerusalem, in the shadow of the temple, with the Sadducees, whose wealth, which is substantial, and whose power, which is considerable, all comes from these sacrifices and offerings that are brought into the temple. And here you have this radical teacher giving an answer, and one of their own scribes suddenly understands, hey, this is bigger than all the stuff on which your power is based, you Sadducees. Oh, this did not go down well with the Sadducees. And yet, ask for our material possessions because he knows this truth. Where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. And what God wants is our hearts. It was what he was always after. And in Jesus, the plan finally comes to fruition. And the temple, the source of all the Sadducees' wealth and power, the temple is done for anyway. Do you know why it will be torn down in just a few short years from this occasion? Because God had finished with it and was ready to move forward from that phase of the plan. If only the Sadducees had known. If only they had correctly recognized the hour of their visitation. But this scribe got it. And when he voiced his full-throated agreement with what Jesus said to and of him, "You are not far from the kingdom." I want us to understand this. When we instinctively recognize the very heart of God's truth, and it is easier than most people think. We act like it's complicated. It isn't, because we are created in his image. And when that which he put within us sees and reaches for that which only he can provide to us, we are this close to his kingdom. And it is not difficult to get to that point. Acts chapter 17. Somebody asked me recently if there were any chapters that I just go back to and go back to and go back to. Acts chapter 17 would be one of those for me. In verse 27, Paul says, God is not far from each of us. That's a good literal translation of the Greek. If you wanted to be a little better English, you would say, God is not far from any of us. And if you read the whole chapter, you see that Paul's contention is that God provides things to help us find him. Now, if you're a cynic, the first question that comes to your mind is, well, if he's so close to us, why do we need help to find him? We just ask for an honest response. How many of you have mislaid your car keys? How many of you have spent 5 minutes searching for your mislaid car keys? 10 minutes searching. 15 minutes. 20 minutes. Alright, we can keep going. Some of you are with me. How many of you have looked in the same places over and over and over again? You know that they are not far from you because the car is in the garage. You had the keys when you parked it there. They can't be far away. But you cannot find them. Let me complicate it a little bit. How many of you would like to search for your mislaid car keys in the pitch black dark? How long would it take you to find them then? Can't even find the bedroom door in the pitch black dark. Imagine trying to search the house for your car keys. If God is so close to us, why do we need help finding him? Because the world is dark. provided all these little lights to aid us, Acts 17 says, so that even as if groping in the dark, we will find him because he is not far from any of us. In the context of that chapter, one of the lights that God provides is the nations. Paul says that God establishes the nations. He puts them where they're going to be, when they're going to be. He establishes their habitations and their boundaries. He determines their language. He determines so much about each nation in turn. It says that he does it so that, even if as groping in the dark, we will find him because he is not far from any of us. When nations do as they should do, and there was a lot of this in the founding of our nation, not our founding times were perfect or that any of those people were perfect, but there was much in the founding of the United States that made it easier for people to find God. If you were here last week, you know that I consider marriage in the same light. When two people love each other in marriage the way they are intended to, it suddenly gets much easier for them to find God. It's part of the design. It's a little light there to guide us along the way. Parenting is the same thing. I have told you 100 times about people I have known who left the church straight away from God and they came back when they had kids. Because having kids teaches us about God and makes it easier for us to find him, the church. Mark and Mark's class has been in the book of Revelation. I presume they still are because I wouldn't have finished it yet if I was to. But early on in your study of the book of Revelation, you will find the first description of the church, the seven churches of Asia Minor, as lamps, lights. There's a reason for that. And it is tragic when the church goes dark. Because our light is intended to make it easier for people. Sometimes it looks like we intentionally have that backwards. And we want to make it hard. It's this easy. I got these 613 commandments. Just keep all these rules. You'll be good. That does not get people breaking down the door to get in. What if a church like marriage and parenting was a glowing example of the love of God? Friends, if we here loved God with all we got and loved each other at least as much as each of us loves ourselves, people would see that and it would lead them to be not far from the kingdom. We need to consider our obligation in this way. So there are all these lights to help us find the way to God, and all of them concentrate on love, which is kind of God's thing. And it dawned on the scribe, and Jesus said accurately to him, "You are not far from the kingdom." We need to reconsider our mission in terms of this. It's not our hope or our job to screen people out and keep them from the kingdom. It is our job to make it easier for them to get in. And we need to recognize these important moments when they are close and just a little nudge from this place where the God-given institutions that serve his will have brought them just a little nudge from there to bring them in You see, God has it all set up for you. Their marriage brings them close to the kingdom. Their parenting brings them close to the kingdom. Often, though it seems counterintuitive to us these days, the government brings them close to the kingdom. Hopefully, the testimony of the church brings them close to the kingdom. Boy, do you remember? Do you remember the murders of the people in the little black Carolina church? Dylan Roof gunned them down as they were in Bible study, and they got exposure. And in all their exposure, the first thing they said was, "We forgive Dylan Roof. We hope that he repents and comes to God." A lot of people heard that and were suddenly not far from the kingdom. Catch them. These moments abound because God has put so many little lights here and there. Catch them at these moments and nudge them to take one last step, having recognized the love and the truth of God, accept His Son, Jesus Christ, and enter the kingdom. I encourage you to get out there and look for those moments and take full advantage of them. And then I'll encourage you to do one last thing. This is not an accusation to anyone. It's simply a fact that even in a little familiar group like this, I don't know where everybody is exactly spiritually. I do know that there are many people who are called Christians who have never entered the kingdom. It has been my thing over these last years to at least try to get us to understand the difference between the church and the kingdom, set our sights on the ladder, and for the church to usher us into it. But I know there are Christians who have not entered the kingdom. And maybe it's you. Or maybe you're just that far. One step remains. Please surrender Jesus Christ. And if you haven't taken that step, do it now while you're close. For now is the acceptable time of salvation. If you would stand, heaven would come back up.
We want to take a moment to thank all of you, our listeners, for setting aside time each week for the Indian Run Christian Church broadcast on this station. You can find out more about the church with a quick visit to our website at www.christforeastcanton.com. On behalf of Pastor Terry and all the folks at Indian Run Christian Church, I pray God's blessing on you and your family.